That wasn't supposed to happen.
What'd you do?
Knocked the mic out of alignment. Hang on. La la la. I moved it too far. And now... What the fuck did I do? Oh, that's what I did. Hang on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ah, that'll help. Okay. There's that, and then it goes like so. This is probably really loud for you.
I don't care at all. This is hilarious.
Okay, and then that goes there, and that goes there! And all that to move the microphone 4 inches.
Sweet.
Those were 4 very important inches, as most women will tell you.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We've got another reviews episode lined up for you today. A lot of people going to be joining the show, chatting with me, the usual suspects, and of course, George. How are you doing? What you eating?
Tim's Cascade Honey Barbecue Kettle Cooked Chips.
Oh, those sound good.
They're so, you can't even know.
You dick. So they're good?
Oh man. Dude, they are so good.
You should mail me a bag.
I should mail you a bag.
Crunch Except cast.
The SML Crunch Cast.
Dude, that's one of the oldest running gags on the show. SML Crunch Cast.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it because you're so crunchy?
No, we used to just eat during the show.
Oh!
Yeah.
I'm slow. I'm catching up for lost time.
Yeah, back in the day when Bogue was still a part of the show, we would go to his house and he would have chips laid out and it would just be Crunch Cast. Munching down.
Damn. That sounds good. Hang on. I got something in my teeth here. Hold on.
Okay.
Leftovers.
You feel better?
Oh, so much better. Did you get all that?
All of it, buddy. All of it.
Excellent. Excellent.
And it's all staying.
This show is real. It's raw.
It is.
Actually, do we have to do the review now? Because I was going to go obsess over Becky Lynch for a couple of minutes.
Oh, my God. Fucking Becky Lynch.
Right? I've been telling you for years.
I'm so excited. Did you watch SmackDown tonight?
I didn't. Don't tell me anything. I did not watch it yet.
Oh, my God. Just the punch. Just pay attention to the punch.
No! Shut up!
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
I might have to kill you if you spoil it anymore.
I'm not saying anything else. Just pay attention to that. Okay. You'll know it when you see it.
I don't know, because the last time anything happened that involved a punch, it was Jax cold potatoing Becky and bloodying her.
Well, it kind of goes the other way around, but not with Nia Jax.
All right. All right. I mean, I like potatoes.
Oh my God. It had to be one of the stiffest.
Sorry, I lost you at potatoes. These chips are as red as Becky's hair. It's amazing.
You're making me hungry, man.
You're always hungry.
That is true. I am fat.
Don't pin that shit on me. Hey, we should review a game.
We should. We got a couple of reviews to take care of tonight. You're doing one of them. You're leading things off with Mage's Initiation, developed and published by Himalaya Studios. It's released January 30th on Steam for $14.99. Darcy is a 16-year-old mage-to-be. A sinister plot threatens his initiation and risks plunging the land of Ignore?
Uh-huh.
Into Conflict and Chaos. I hate when there's names that I, like, I don't even know if it's Darcy or D'Arce.
No, it's Darcy. And it's a male name in this case, because it's D apostrophe Arcy.
Yeah, all that stuff confuses me. I have a very weak brain. Anyway, choose from four classes and train in the elemental arts. Master a unique range of spells to solve puzzles, battle monsters, and confront the ultimate evil, which is presumably you, George.
Yeah! Wait, hey-o. I'm the ultimate evil?
Anyway.
I am, but I'm kind of like a late internet mini-boss, maybe. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. You're there.
Hey,
how's the game?
Remember that time when a company remade the first three King's Quest games in, like, super awesome detail? I sure do. I was pee myself excited for it when they announced that shit. And then I remember seeing previews for it, and then I promptly forgot about it entirely when life and kids started happening. Because that happens sometimes. So then... pardon me, I got some potatoes stuck in my throat.
That'll forward to now. That'll fucking teach you.
See? I took a potato for the... I was going to say the team, but that potato was for me.
Yeah, it was. And it was
that potato was entirely for me. So, remember that time when Mage's Initiation was expected to come out in February of 2014?
Was it?
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. You know how I know that some games are worth waiting for well beyond their expected release date?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any of the current gameplay for Star Citizen?
No.
Okay. So... even if you go back as far as like a year where they were demoing it on stage on one of the planets, where when you zoomed up to the planet, there was no cutscene. It just, you go right to the planet, and they had player one wandering around a space station, like looking at characters and looking out windows at the environment. And then player two slowly lowers his ship that just came in from out of space past one of the windows, and player one saw him. It's just, my mind was blown by how awesome that could possibly be. So Star Citizen has been in development forever. And when it finally comes out, it'll be amazing. So it's kind of like crock pot cooking. The best foods are slow cooked. Now, to be fair, for every Star Citizen, there's also a Mighty Number 9.
Yeah.
And the jury's still out on Bard's Tale 4. And then there's Yoke Ventures or LA Space Game or Clang. And I swear to everything, if Unknown Realm RPG doesn't get finished, I might actually cry real tears and then rage quit the internet. Anyway, you can, but that's someone else's game. Let's talk about this one. You get my point. Yeah. Not every Kickstarter game is going to make it. And the ones that make it aren't always going to make it on time. This one made it. It kind of slow rolled over the finish line, but it made it, and holy crap, was it worth the wait.
That sounds promising.
So, you know how I've got my three categories. I've got the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
Or the fugly in some cases, and I've talked at length at the fugliness of some games. Let's start with the ugly in this game. Here we go. I got nothing. There were no crippling crashes. Nothing. There were no crippling crashes. There were no deaths that could not be restored to before. There wasn't a single damn thing in this game that made me want to throw my laptop through the window. Nada.
Wow.
Bam. Okay.
Is that a first with you?
It might actually be. No. Do you remember the steampunk robot one that I did on Switch that was like the tactical game?
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure there was nothing ugly about that either, because after we were done with that review, I kept playing and finished it and then played through a second time. It was that good.
Damn.
So now we're just going to skip back to the good because this shit's fun. Here we go. Actually, hang on. Okay. So. Let's get into it. There are four elements of magic to select from. Earth, air, water, fire. Your typical trope on that front. The cool thing is that your character's magic element is based on answers to, like situational morality quizzes that totally throw back to Ultima 4, which is great because I loved the class selection in the Ultima games based on how you answer certain situational questions. This was pretty much the same thing. Excuse me. Except for the fact that every question had four different answers. And they ranged all over the map from be the best do-gooder that you can possibly be in this situation or fuck 'em! So that pretty much was, and then there were like two in between questions. Yippee skippy. This is as close to a modern Sierra game as we are ever going to get without somebody dragging Roberta Williams out of retirement. I'm serious. It, all that stuff that they did with the King's Quest games must have really sparked their imagination. And the throwback to the Quest for Glory games, Heroes Quest, is very much present here. There are definitely differences in terms of how they handled the system versus the way Heroes Quest did, Quest for Glory did it back then. I'm sorry, I'm old. It was Heroes Quest for a really long time until it became Quest for Glory because of copyright bullshit with that board fucking board game. So
I love that fucking board game, by the way. I still own it, and I love it. I cherish it.
Fuck your board game!
Okay. This is going to be another 40-minute review, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's just it's going to be 5 minutes of review and like 15 minutes of Chip Foley. All right. So, the music is great. It's beautiful. I would actually listen to that at work and have done so. Just listening to the music, it's great. They captured several different moods in the music that I was able to get to in the amount of time that I was able to play the game. And it was fantastic. I loved every second of it. The artwork and the environments are fantastic. There's absolutely no question that the level of detail and love that went into making every single screen look beautiful nothing was overlooked, and it's a joy just exploring in this game. And it's a total throwback to being a kid and playing the old Sierra adventure games, which obviously it's modeled after, but they captured the feeling really well. And I love that about it. The spoken dialogue is fun, and it definitely adds to the immersion. I couldn't quite tell, but it almost seemed like the character animations, like the lips and stuff, were synchronized to the voices. And that was actually kind of cool. But I couldn't quite tell because I'm not sure if I was playing it on a second screen and there might have been a little bit of lag. But I'm attributing that to my side of it more than anything else. Exploration is fun and it's key, as is item collection. If it isn't nailed down, get after it, because you're probably gonna need it. Oh, there's a board leaning against the side of the city wall. I'm just going to take that. Oh, hey, mushrooms. The command bar has some nice options to it. Instead of being forced into one option, you've got a few other things you can do. Like, you can hide it under the top of the screen. You can fix it to the top of the screen. So it gives you a few options, but it all looks like some of the developments that Sierra made in their later games, where it started becoming more mouse driven than anything else, without having to go all the way back to real time text entry, which in some of the games was an absolute pain in the ass. And if you didn't type fast enough, then you were proper fucked. Puzzle solving was made fun again, which I think a lot of games could take note of and use as an example, because not every game coming out, indie and otherwise, makes puzzle solving fun. Learning the ropes of the game did not feel like somebody holding my hand and dragging me through a tutorial. It was woven very nicely into the game, and I didn't feel like I was having my hand held. It just, the story built on everything, and it was very immersive, and I really enjoyed it. The NPC interaction was fun, and there were some hilarious characters, like that duo in the pub, just absolutely hilarious. And the dude selling stuff right as you enter the town, who's like super ultra trying to be vague and mystical, and pretty much nobody in town is having anything to do with his shit, it seemed. It was great. I love, and the more people you meet, when you go back and talk to people, they'll have things to say about each other. So learning about all that, and it's all recorded dialogue, it's great. And it really, really was just lots of fun to go back into that environment again. Let's see. My mouse is on the other side of the desk, and I'm too lazy to move it over here, so I'm just going to lean over and pretend like I'm still close by talking loud.
And then come works back. Flawlessly.
Is it sweet?
Can't even tell.
I was worried for a second. I'm glad that's all working out well.
Doesn't it all sound like you're just screaming from half the room away?
That's good, because if we did that, that might sound unprofessional and reflect poorly on your show.
Yeah, go figure.
So, that leaves a few bad things. Not too many bad things, though. And they're not even that.
Can I just say I can't wait for the PR company to listen to this review and wonder where the hell they went wrong in life?
They're going to wonder where you went wrong in life letting me review games for you. I think that's how that's going to pan out.
Probably.
Or they're going to get really hungry. Hey, guys, if you're out there listening, I will send you some of these chips as an apology, because they're really good and you'll love them. All right. So, and yes, Joe, I'll send you some later.
Yay.
You need to send me your updated address, because the address that I have for you is still old and we're going to have to take care of that.
Okay.
All right. So
anyway, where were we?
So I'm going to zero in on the voiceovers a little bit for a couple of reasons. One, some voices sounded like they were recorded in what I would refer to as a well-treated room with a decent microphone, which is good. And at least a couple other characters who sounded like their voice recordings were done in a bathroom with the long white pencil mic that used to come with old PCs, if you can remember that far back.
I can.
And then on top of that, it appeared as though somebody went through the painstaking effort of cutting off all of the room reverb tails off of it. So you had it when they were talking and then just went cut right off. And it was really disorienting. So there were inconsistencies in that. I don't know what was behind the need for that, or possibly if that was just something that was in the demo version of it that you had and they fixed it in post. I don't know, but it was something that was distracting to me.
Yeah, we should point out that we're reviewing this the day before it releases on Steam, so there could be a day one update that addresses some of these issues.
Mm-hmm. We'll allow that. And actually, by the time this posts, actually, it'll be release date, I think. So,
yep.
Actually, we're technically reviewing this the day of its release in the past, in the future.
I'm confused.
Just roll with it, dude. Come on. Okay. Where are your improv skills? Never deny the guy you're improving with. Fuck.
I'm new to this. I've only done 450 episodes.
We're coming up to 500 soon, aren't we?
We are. By the way, next episode is our 6-year anniversary, so I'm going to need a new intro for you.
Fuck! I'm just going to make a song about dropping bits, and then we'll... But no, we'll talk about that later. We don't want to...
Yes.
Your poor developers are like, fuck this guy. Okay, combat to me was a bit of a chore, and I emphasize the to me part because I'm guessing that for a lot of people it's probably going to be just fine. I found it to be a bit tedious, and because I'm really old, I like getting experience points for killing things, and I also appreciate the fact that not having experience points granted for killing monsters means that there is a non-violence way to finish out this game. I'm cool with that. But I'm old, and I want to be rewarded for beating the shit out of things. So take that with a grain of salt and the fact that I'm old. And then I'm going to go back to the voices for just a second again, because the main character in some situations had some kind of interesting delay, echo, reverb thing going on. That without being rude necessarily, that's not a decision I would have made. And I found it to be a little distracting at times, especially since I associate things like reverb voices and echoes and delays with gravitas and things that are important that are happening, or in caves, or like the high mages that are asking you the quiz questions. That's appropriate because they're super important and menacing and overbearing and so forth. Or, of course, if you're in a cave, because then things echo in caves. But when it's just random things like, I don't think I should pick that up right now, that doesn't need it. No, stop it. But that's, again, that's my take on it. And I'm sure that other people will find that quaint. Thus concludes pretty much everything I have to say about that game at this point, other than I'm looking forward to continuing to play it.
Well, then the only question left is $15 on it. What is your verdict?
Buy it now. Get it now.
Okay.
Now.
It's not fucking out yet. I got to wait 10 minutes.
Did I stutter? Oh, I did stutter. Shoot. I need to go rethink my life. Fuck!
Oh, George, it is always good having you on. You make me laugh more than anyone else on this show.
Making you laugh.
I know you do. Do you have any final words before we move on with the show? Is that a no?
That was it.
All right, moving on. We've got our good friend Pernell Vaughn joining us. Pernell, how's it going?
It's cold.
Yeah, it is.
Winter's here.
Yeah.
My voice won't go down.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it did. Who would have thought? But yeah, it's chilly willy. Game season is drowning me, but in a good way, because really, too much fun is not really ever a real concern to me. But how about you?
Well, I picked up Kingdom Hearts today, and then I had a babysit, so I didn't get to play it yet.
I know that feeling. I picked up Kingdom Hearts, or rather, it came to my house, and I didn't even get the Collector's or Deluxe Edition, because I...
Really?
I don't know. I just kind of decided, I was like, should I? And I was like, yeah, I'll just get the normal one. It can't be that much better. It's like probably a steelbook, where the cover of the steelbook doesn't look as good as the normal cover.
Oh, the steelbook is sexy.
Don't tell me that, because I did that with Smash Brothers. It was like, get the steelbook for Smash Brothers. And I bought Smash Brothers, looked at the cover of the game everyone else got, and then I looked at my steelbook. I was like, I'd rather have the damn normal cover than this stupid steelbook. But thankfully, it comes with both, so it's not like I'm really one or the other. Actually, no, it didn't. It only came with the steelbook, so I was with it. But,
well, if you don't want that steelbook...
Well, now I'm already locked into it, because I paid the money for it. But I'm saying, it's just more like you pay extra. It's like you could at least maybe either embroider the image onto the steelbook or make the image on the steelbook comparable to what everyone else is getting. Because I want the steelbook casing. I don't want just a general medallion on the front.
See, I like the minimalistic look.
I like that for shirts. Well, as far as my games are concerned, I want them to be splashed with art. Give me the goods. And the normal game has, you know, all the characters sitting on the rooftop. And it's very, you know, authentic and similar to... not the cover of Kingdom Hearts 2, but like one of the more iconic images from the game where they're all kind of just chilling, like eating ice cream. And then I think Birth by Sleep's cover had something like that where they were kind of, it's been a while, but I swear I think Birth by Sleep had a cover where they were all kind of sitting at the edge of a building too. But it's been so long, maybe I'm forgetting. Or maybe
basically, Kingdom Hearts is a building sitting simulator
where we eat sea salt ice cream, which by the way, I never heard of that until that game. And I'm not even sure if it's real. But I can't fathom sea salt ice cream as a thing that would be delicious to eat. But
not at all.
What do I know, right? I'm just some plebe from, you know, not, you know, from the East Coast who hasn't had any real cuisine like sea salt ice cream or, I don't know, you know, marmalade and tar sandwiches, whatever people are eating out there. But whatever. That's all.
Damn kids and their avocado toast.
Well, that's just, I don't even understand avocado toast. It's literally avocado spread on bread, toasted bread.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet it's tasty-ish, but really, not enough to lose my, not to flip my lid over or anything. It's just avocado on bread. I guess they probably put like some red pepper flakes or some like I don't know, like cayenne seasoning just to make it look a little festive or some trash. But I don't know. I don't get it. Never did.
I don't get it either. Kids these days, get off our lawn.
That's right. Leave me with my hamburger helper or my Rita's water ice or my, I don't know, Luigi's water ice or my, well, some other Mario water ice. You know, the good stuff, the real treats.
I just want the good old days back. I want the 1900s back.
No, you are drunk. They can stay where the hell they are. If it isn't 1980 or 1990, I don't want it.
What about the 90s?
Mixed bag. You know, that was towards, you know, responsibilities and crap like that. It wasn't as imaginative. But I would take the 90s too, I guess. 1980 to 2000.
How about the 60s?
No.
No?
No, unless I can wear a disguise.
Yeah, you could.
It'd have to be some disguise. Being black and all, I mean, let's be honest here. If you were, before 1980, it sucked to be black. And I ain't going to front. Not even going to front.
True. Sucked. Well, at least in America. What about in London?
Good point. I don't know how it was like, what it was like in London. Maybe it was awesome there.
Well, you know what? You do know what it was like in London in 1960s. You know why?
Oh, you son of a bitch. Oh, that was perfection. Yeah, you do that.
First game to talk about tonight is called The Raven Remastered, developed by King Art Games, published by THQ Nordic, released January 22nd on the Switch for $29.99. London, 1964. An ancient ruby is stolen from the British Museum. At the crime scene, a raven feather. Is somebody trying to follow in the footsteps of the raven, the legendary master thief who disappeared years before? Purnell, you experienced this game. Let us know.
Well, I will say that this game has an actual awesome narrative, but it does come with a few hiccups that you might have to be, you know, able to handle in order to appreciate it. But I'll lead in. So you play as Constable Anton Zellner, who happens to stumble, quote unquote stumble, because he more kind of injects himself into a mystery involving a lost jewel, as mentioned by Joe earlier. A jewel was stolen by this person who may well be the fictional raven who's supposed to be dead, but is apparently not. And the jewel that was stolen is one of a pair, resulting in a need to be concerned about what happens to the other jewel. Will it also be stolen? So this ends up placing Zellner onto a moving train that is supposedly transporting this jewel from point A to point B, where it will be eventually displayed, you know, on an art exhibit where it's meant to be, you know, shown. And on this train are a myriad cast of characters, including a sly musician. You have a bratty child and is overprotective, but also kind of actually not very protective at all. Mother, famed author, a doctor, and then a number of other cast of colorful characters, and all including most particularly and more importantly, a fellow detective who's on the train because he is monitoring the other, you know, jewel that may be stolen because he has a particular bone to pick with this so-called raven. Being that he believes he was supposedly the one who killed the original raven, which is how he became famous in the first place. So to hear that a new raven's in town doesn't bode well with him. So this adventure involves you piecing, you know, secrets and tricks and clues together over the course of this transfer of jewelry to try to determine who this raven is and to stop him from stealing this jewel. And this game itself, there is no action as far as, like, say, you know, like, press the button to jump and punch this guy in the face. None of that. No quick time events. No action-paction. But what it is a pretty slick narrative that plays out in the form of an adventure game. So early on, for example, you'll start on the train. And as you are on the train, you'll be able to interact with the environment, explore, look around, and talk to different characters on the train. If you come across an item that you are able to interact with, you can pick it up sometimes and hold on to it. And if you collect other items, you sometimes get the ability to combine them into another item, which can be used somewhere else. Say, for example, you might come across a oily rag or rag, which you can then, you know, wrap around a like a stick or a pole. I'm trying to say it without spoiling it, anything in particular, but you can wrap it around a pole and then light it on fire and boom, you have a torch. So
yay.
It ends up being, Exactly. Fire, baby. So it's a matter of you being, you know, aware enough of your surroundings enough to know, hey, I need this thing, but I have these things. I can combine them to make this thing. That's amazing. So you'll be doing that and making use of that to solve puzzles, as well as also just finding other items you can use to interact with other areas of the environment, like locking, picking locks and things of that nature. One thing I didn't like about the game, and this is one of the hiccups you'll have to contend with if you want to hopefully appreciate this game, is that, again, it is an adventure game, which means sometimes there are particular cues that will be necessary to trigger the next event. Sometimes require, say, for example, there's a guy on one side of the room, and you want to talk to him. And you talk to him again, he might have like two or three lines of dialogue and he'll be quiet. And you're like, oh, but I feel like he should know something else, but he won't say it. That means you have to go figure out some other thing, maybe go down to another door, and that door will result in you, you know, just saying, I can't open that door unless I got something I need to say in there. And then suddenly, if you go back, that guy might have something new to say. So sometimes you'll find yourself just checking with everybody and clicking on everything, until eventually you come across the cue to trigger the next thing you need to do. Eventually, though, you kind of get used to that process as well, and you start to become a little bit more thorough, which results in you having to deal with stuff like that less and less. So I'm not going to say that's a forever problem, but until you get really used to just how the game flows and how it expects you to accomplish different things, you may find yourself retreading old ground, hoping to trigger a new event.
Yeah.
The other downside to it is that sometimes you'll wish that the main character walked a bit faster. It's interesting how you could be in a situation that demands urgency. Not saying, like, you know, again, there's no quick time events or nothing per se, but you may find yourself like in a situation where danger lurks. You might be about to die. Something awful is happening. You got to get out fast. But then Zeldner's like, I'm going to saunter down the hall, but I do not want to die. And you're like, why are you walking? Give me a run button. This is supposed to be frantic. I'm supposed to be freaking out, man. But he's sauntering. And this, for better or worse, because it's actually kind of cool. Like, he could be in a bad situation, and now dialogue is like, this is a very well-kept cabinet. And this is a very soft towel. I'm like, dude, just take the damn towel. You don't sit there and describe it. This is a soft towel. It's like, I need that shit. Give me the towel. There it is. Problem solved. You know you're freaking out, buddy. Get over it. Or don't get over it. Accept the panic and move through it. But as long as you can get past... Oh, and one last thing. Some of the character models can be a little meh. Most of them are pretty solid. And I'm like, this works for me. But there's a few. Most particular, there's a little boy in the first chapter that drove me freaking nuts. I'm like, this kid's face is freaking me out. But it's not enough to ruin a perfectly solid narrative in game. And when the narrative starts to kick in at its right, its respectful parts, you will be interested in seeing where the hell this is going to go. I can't believe that guy did that. I got to get out of this now, too. And it ends up resulting in a pretty cool mystery, because you really do find yourself wondering, who the hell is this raven? And who is it working with this raven? And what's going to happen to this jewel? Because they continue to introduce new characters here and there, or they'll move old characters to new locations as this jewel is being transferred. And it's enjoyable. I honestly was having a great time playing this game. Despite the things I did say I did not like, it was not enough to deter me from wanting to see how this thing would play out.
Sounds pretty good. So for $30 on it, what do you think?
I think it's a solid buy for fans of adventure games.
Cool.
No.
I thought there was more there.
No, it really is. Like, if you're a fan of adventure games, I think it's worth checking out. Oh, the OST is really good, too. I think maybe they had an orchestra do it.
See, I knew there was more.
Always. I gotta dig deep. Remember my teachings from gameplay experience.
That'll learn you. Anyway, your second game to talk about is called Utopia 9, A Volatile Vacation, developed by Whalegun, published by Cubic Games, released January 19th on the Switch for $9.99. Welcome to the best vacation resort of the galaxy, where nothing is as promised. Are you in need of a vacation to remember? Utopia 9 guarantees sunshine, entertainment, and bloodthirsty mutants. You play as the most recent guest of this scam resort. Can you survive the onslaught and sue the travel agency? Brunel, tell us about it.
I don't know where this sun is they're talking about, because that planet is pretty murky. But that's another story. Anyway, the way this game works is that you are, like you said earlier, you are a tourist who just kind of crash lands on this planet, which results in a sort of roguelike adventure. Because there's really no story to this game. It really is. You want to sit down and just blow some dudes up for a couple minutes and then move on with your life.
I'm sold.
Well, bam, there it is then. When you land on the planet, you pretty much immediately are injected into like a twin stick shooter sort of environment. Your starting weapons are a pistol and your suitcase. Your suitcase working as a melee weapon. When enemies show up, you have the left thumbstick to move your character around, and the right thumbstick allows you to aim your gun. If you press both directions and the guns are both thumbsticks in the same direction, you are able to walk a little bit faster than if you did not. Say, for example, you're walking backwards while firing forwards. You'll walk slower as you do that. So as enemies show up, sometimes they'll have melee weapons. Sometimes they'll have some of the various types of weapons in the game, such as, you know, energy weapons, bullet guns, or grenades, things of that nature. That's pretty much the main staples. So, because like, there's like I said, bullet weapon. There's also like a sort of spread gun. Think of like a shotgun type weapon. And you basically have to deal with those guys by using weapons of similar properties. Because again, it's kind of a little bit of a cross-pollination between what the enemy's using and what you can use.
Yeah, now, seeing in the write-up it has 40 weapons. So that's a lot of weaponry to mess with.
It really is. Though I will say also that, and it's worth pointing out that even though there are 40 weapons, don't necessarily think that they're all extremely different. Like, they're cool, but for example, I had one weapon that was called a baseball bat, and then I also found a weapon that was called a cooking glove. And I was like, cooking glove? That sounds crazy, thinking it's like, I can punch a guy and set him on fire, you know? But it was mostly like, you know, this weapon has, you know, this level of attack power, this cooldown time, and this range and strike. So It was more just like saying, I have this cooking glove, and that was it. Though, admittedly, it didn't stop me from using it to beat the tar out of dudes when I came across them, so it wasn't like it didn't work. It did the job it was meant to do. I just wish that I could grab a guy and set him on fire with the glove, because it was a cooking glove. It just sounds like that's what it would do. But as you move through the environment, every once in a while you'll come across a treasure chest, and treasure chest can contain a number of different things, whether it be a new gun, a new like projectile, like a bomb or grenade, or it can be like armor that you can wear, which kind of works similar to how armor works in like, say, Doom, where when you pick it up, it gives you like extra health to wear. And once they knock that down, you'll get back to start hurting you for your normal health again.
Mm-hmm.
So now each section of the game, it's sort of like think of it like a tree, like a logic tree. You start out in the middle, and after you beat the first section, you are tasked with choosing whether you want to go left or right. And depending on which section you go, which the game does tell you, so it's not a surprise, but depending on which direction you go, you'll find different types of loot in that area. One side might provide you with energy weapons and armor. The other side might provide you with bullet weapons and grenades. So it's up to you to decide, okay, which route do I want to take? And it branches off too, so making your decision doesn't necessarily just determine what the next area will have for you. It will also determine what the next maybe three areas will offer to you, because you'll be cut off from the other side if you choose to default to, like, you know, the other side to start. So it takes a little bit of planning to get your point across on which way you want to go, and then you got to commit to it. Now, this game also has a rivals, not a rivals, what do they call those things in those games now? It's become a weird new trend. This is called the Wanted Vendetta Folk. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, and you might have to know the idea of it when I describe it to you, you can tell me the name of it. But basically, if you are out exploring and you get the living tar kicked out of you and an enemy kills you, he will take the stuff that is in your primary loadout. And I should have clarified this earlier. You can actually have like a primary loadout being like one left-handed weapon and one right-handed weapon. And then you get a second loadout for left-handed and right-handed weapon. You can switch between them at will, whether you switch the whole set or you can just switch, okay, I want the gun from the second set of weapons to get moved up to my primary set of weapons. That way it allows you to mix and match basically between four different weapons. Anyway, when the guy kills you, he steals your primary loadout. And then when the new tourist comes down, because as being meant to make a roguelike, a new body will land on the environment to get down to business. He will have the ability to track down the previous guy who killed you. And if you can kill him with the new tourist, you can steal back your stuff.
Oh, so like a nemesis system.
There it is. I don't know why I wasn't thinking nemesis, but yes, a nemesis system. That's exactly what it is. I feel old and lame.
I feel proud of myself.
You should.
I contributed.
And good contribution.
Yay.
So I also need to mention for sure, in addition to the things I described, I'm not quite sure. I wasn't really tracking to see if there's like an experience system, because I couldn't tell. But I just know that every once in a while when you kill a dude, the game will prompt you to press the left button on your left Joy-Con, or, you know, probably left on the control pad on another console. But what happens when you do that is you go to a mutation screen. That's kind of like the level up system in this game. And when you mutate, the game gives you the choice of three different perks you can equip. And they're generally randomized, so every playthrough will be a bit different. But when you select the mutation, it will stick to you, and you'll be able to use that for the rest of that playthrough. So, I mean, I think it's funny because one of my main complaints about the game is that your character walks too slowly for my taste. Like, I wish you could walk faster. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, here's a mutation where you can walk faster. I'm like, why couldn't that be default? Everything would be so much better if this was a default thing.
Dude, but I feel that way in so many games where I just like, come on, move a little bit faster. Oh, there's a run button. Why isn't that the default?
Yes, it drives me nuts, and I wish this game had a run button, but all you can do is get it with that perk. Got to get the perk. If it is available to you, always take it, because you can't go wrong with extra mobility. Oh, my God.
True.
But, and then there's like one other thing, which I barely touch because I hoard points, but as you progress through the different areas and you kill a bunch of dudes, you will also get what's considered travel points. It's kind of like a funny ha-ha, hey, spend these at the travel depot or whatever. But when you die, and the new guy is bought into the game, you can go to a specific location and it allows you to spend the travel points on a variety of perma perks, I guess I could call them. Or more so like gameplay augmentation perks, where like, hey, now for this playthrough, you'll get, you know, 20% more melee damage, but you'll get 5% and take 5% more damage when you use your, if you get hit. So it's like a weird little balance thing to kind of make the gameplay scenario a little different than the previous ones, because you'll have these like crazy little travel augmentations for your chores. So it ends up making a little bit of variety in the gameplay. So you're probably like, what the heck? What do you dislike about the game, Pernell? Well, the only downside I can think of is that this game, it almost feels sort of like a mindlessy gunner, you know, running gunner. Like sometimes you'll play a game and it's like, well, these characters are really cool. I like hearing their grunts, or sometimes they have like, you know, there's certain things that make you like the world you're running around, like specific perks to it, you know, things that make you attached to where you're at. But I feel like this game, there was nothing that I came across that made me go, you know, this world is really cool. These aliens are awesome. Or, you know, these environments are stellar. It's just more like there's another zombie. There's another alien guy. Let me shoot him in the face too. Kill all these aliens. Good for them. They're dead. More aliens. I'll kill them. But it was never, I never felt like, oh, I particularly like this enemy type, or wow, these guys are adorable, or these guys are awful. You know, there was none of that. It was just kill dudes, move on, get perk, keep going, kill dudes, move on. So there was no real, like, there was no, like, I didn't get the sense of charm from it. There wasn't that thing, the spark, I'll call it. But that doesn't make the game itself unplayable. I had fun with what I played. It just was nothing that made me go, I'm going to be playing this game for months to come, or weeks to come, more like days to come.
Yeah, well, sometimes you just need a mindless distraction, and it sounds like that's pretty good for what it is.
I agree with you on that one, sir.
Well, then, $10 on it, what's your verdict?
I'd give it a solid try. Is like I said, the gameplay works, the gunplay works, and you'll appreciate, I mean, you'll pretty much get use out of it while you're playing. You will have fun with it. It's just basically a matter of when you're done, you'll be ready to move on to the next running gunner.
Sounds good. I might actually pick this one up. You kind of sold me on it. I'm looking for something just kind of, you know, in between playing other stuff. And it sounds like this is a good kind of distraction style game to just fire it up, play for a couple of minutes and move on.
I would have to give it that. It definitely made for good lunch breaks.
Yeah, sounds perfect for that.
Ta-da! See that? Oh, yeah. And also, the way to that, to make it a little bit better towards that point, is whenever you beat an area and you move on to the next area, before you start the area, the game gives you the means of saving the game right there and leaving and coming back. So I think even they designed it to be intended to be like, hey, you can play this game like 5-minute increments here and there. If you're on the bus, just run through a quick section and then save the game and come back later.
Nice. Good stuff. All right, you got one final game to talk about. That is called Mages of Mistralia, developed and published by Borealis Games, released January 29th on the Switch for $19.99. In a world of magic, your mind is your greatest weapon. Learn the ways of magic and design your own spells to fight enemies, navigate treacherous terrain, and right past wrongs in the Kingdom of Mistralia. Pernell, tell us about it.
In this game, you play as a young, well, I should probably lead in the start. In this world, mages are kind of outlawed and disliked. They are not a good thing. The story tells you why. I'm not going to spoil it. You can learn that as you play the game. Anyway, you unfortunately learn that you are, or fortunately, learn that you are one of these such mages, and your life is flipped, turned upside down. And now I'd like to take a minute and sit here and tell you why this game is pretty cool. So as the newly inducted witch or mage Zaya, you are tasked with learning the ways of magic and then kind of exploring the world and taking on magely duties as of uncorrupting the world. And over time, learning just what the heck your destiny is in this crazy world. And you explore this crazy world, sort of like an adventure, action-adventure style Zelda-esque game. You know, well, I shouldn't say Zelda-esque. That's kind of too much. But anyway, it's an action-adventure game, top-down. And the way the gameplay works is as you run around, you will eventually come across a book. This book talks to you, is sentient, and sounds like a demon, which is kind of weird because I would think that a book that's supposed to be your friend shouldn't sound ominous from the start of the freaking game. But this book teaches you how to use magic. And magic is done in this game by this specific way. There are four types of spells that you can use. There's Immediate, which is considered instant spells, like pretty much like melee attacks, is what it boils down to. Ego spells, they consider it as affecting you directly, but the best way to say it is like, hey, this is how you put up, say, like a defense shield or something like that, or affect your body. You can like dash with it. Active spells are things that can be used like, say, like projectiles. That's why I that's the best way to describe it to me. And then the last one is Kriya, which is like, it involves things like, you know, bridges or walls or structures, I'd call them. So by default, you have these very base level spells. But as you play through the game, you come across runes. And each rune can provide you with a different property to modify the spell. It could be a behavioral trait, like, say, for example, well, let me start with this. It can start with behavioral trait. So to say, I have one that's called move, and I equip it to the fire, This is funny. Anyway, the point is, you can equip it to the Immediate, and once you do that, it becomes, like, say, a fireball. It starts out, no, there it is, with Actus. God, these names are driving me nuts, and I wrote it on paper. Anyway.
You're playing it now, aren't you?
No, I'm really not. I wrote it on paper. So... Actus spells are a projectile. So it starts out as like a standing fireball. You can equip the move relic to it. And now all of a sudden, instead of just being a fireball exploding in the air, now it's a fireball that you throw. It has a projectile property. And if you equip some other properties to it, such as, say, the left modifier, you can make it so that the fireball always hooks whenever you throw the fireball. And it's weird that you're like, why the heck would you want your fireball to hook? And sometimes you really won't. Sometimes it's mostly just like, hey, I might want to have to throw some trick shots at enemies or whatever, but there's also puzzles and even certain boss fights that will make it so that using those things will be a factor that you'll want to use. Or you might equip the move ability to the, the ego spell, which is the shield. And now instead of being a shield, by using move, it becomes a dash ability. So now you just dash across the screen. And you can equip multiple behavioral and, you know, modification runes to each spell to further and further tweak them to be things that you want them to do. You can take a fireball, it becomes three fireballs. You can take a fireball and it can explode. You can take ice and then make it rain. You can turn the fireball into an ice ball. And it just expands more and more as you play the game and discover more runes that are hidden on the map or acquired, you know, through natural progression and so on and so forth. The majority of my joy from the game stemmed from taking these abilities and running around with them and discovering new spell combinations and then using them to solve puzzles on the map to get new, you know, runes to do more ability change-ups. It's kind of nice. And in addition to that, you can also come across, you know, the typical action-adventure pickup get items. Like, you can find these purple balls. And for every four purple balls you trade into a special fountain, you can either increase the length of your health gauge or your magic gauge. And I should probably specify something here now that I just made that comment about a magic gauge. Every attack you do in this game will make use of the magic gauge. So there is nothing that you can do in this game that is 100% free. So you'll have to be mindful if you're the type that just wants to mash the X button willy-nilly to use your melee attack, because that also drains magic. That is not to say that it's just going to drain quickly, resulting in you being a sitting duck to enemies. But again, you do need to be smart about how you use it in a way that I actually kind of found enjoyable. In addition to that, I like the fact that I guess this could be a Zelda-esque thing, but I really ever really needed the shield in Zelda outside of puzzles. But in this game, you'll be fighting guys on the map, like mostly gremlins and goblin-type dudes. And the way they attack you is they kind of bunch up and attack you like in a melee formation sometimes. And there's also enemies like plants and monsters or whatever that will throw, you know, projectiles at you too, sometimes from off the side of the screen. So what you need to be aware of is knowing when to combo with your normal attacks and when to go, screw that, put the shield up, and then put your shield to block the projectiles. And unfortunately, I was getting melee wild a couple times, not realizing that I was setting myself to get hit with a projectile from off the screen. So again, a little bit, gotta be a little bit smarter about how you do combat in this game. Though they do have difficulties at the beginning where you can choose from being like one where the game is simple, like easy as balls for the purpose of you experiencing the story. I don't recommend that though, because come on, man, you're playing the game. But the next
some of us like pussy crybaby mode.
Possibly, but at the same time, I feel like with this game, I thought the challenge on the medium difficulty was just right. The hardest difficulty has permadeath. Screw that. I value my time in this regard. But the medium difficulty just makes it a little bit tougher, which means that you're kind of, you know, you get into the situation I'm describing. Like, you don't want to just kind of blindly strike guys because you'll get hit from behind and knocked out. But, you know, you play smart, use your spells effectively, and you'll be awesome. And
so it makes you earn it, but it's fair.
Exactly. I think it's worth it because of that. Can think about it. You have a game where they give you all these different spells that you can modify and change up to be an awesome combatant. But if the combat itself is simple dimple, you'll never truly get to utilize it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and even by default, I would say that the enemies never become like, you know, tactical warlords or anything like that. You're not going to be out here going, crap, I got to pause the game and just think about how I'm going to handle this situation. I mean, you will ultimately be, as long as you're competent in playing the game and doing well, you will beat the game. But having the ability to say, okay, I personally found that having landmines set up here worked well for me, whereas for you, you might go, you know, I decided to say, screw it, I'm going to get like a freaking a fire whip and just start smacking everybody with it, you know. And it just ends up being a matter of how you personally decide to take on the game. But having enemies that don't just sit there and take it is nice for giving you the incentive to making use of the customization to explore it and play with it. And I think that's a big part of what makes this game good. You want to play with all the abilities. You want to play with the combinations. You want to discover the new combination. And you want to kick the tar out of the really cool large bosses, which will definitely make you put to use different spell combinations in order to survive them. And they're not necessarily short bosses either. They're not lengthy, but it's not the Zelda, at least from what I can tell, they weren't necessarily the Zelda hit the guy three times and he's dead situation or system. Yeah. You'll put a little bit of damage output onto them. So I feel like I can't really think of any real complaints I have to the game. I will say the only downside, which is really a minor complaint, is eventually you get the ability to use more than one spell of a type. So you might have a fire spell that is a landmine, and you might have a fire spell that is a fireball. Now, you can only have each element is its own spell. And this is, which one is, of course, spells are not each element. Each type of spell is one button. So the, you know, fire, the immediate spells and the projectile spells and the transportation spells are all one button. But let's say, for example, you decide you want to have, I don't know, three different, you know, immediate abilities that have different properties attributed to them. You can go ahead, create three different spells and give them names if you feel like it. And then while you're fighting, if you decide, you know, I don't want to use this one anymore, I want to use this one instead, you can hit the L trigger button. And allows you to switch between the different spells you have stored in your inventory that you've already created. But the game doesn't stop while this is happening, for better or worse. So if you're trying to get wacky-tacky and switch up all your different attacks during combat, unless you're away from the fray, you will be a sitting duck getting the crap beat out of you. So I highly advise you to not do that. Just come in there knowing that these four attacks are what you're going to use to win this particular skirmish. And save all the spell switching for just, you know, just having access to things in between combat to freshen things up or to be ready for a puzzle that you might want to solve using a spell type. So, but honestly, I enjoyed this game very much so. I think it's genuinely a good time. Again, another case of the music being spectacular. I'm a sucker for games where all the characters kind of speak in a whoop, 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 whoop. They always like a fake language. They don't speak English. I like that. And though I will say the areas themselves, the different locations on the map are like sprawling environments where it's like, I can go any of five directions. I will say that it's still fun to explore. And every once in a while, you'll have areas where you want to backtrack because you have a new room, which will allow you to reach an area you couldn't before, which then leads you to, you know, the collectible bauble. So ultimately, I think it's a fun time, a very enjoyable time at that.
Cool. So for $20, your thoughts?
I think it's a very solid buy.
Nice.
Nice ice. Great game to play.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one on Xbox when we reviewed it quite a while ago. Cool to see it on the Switch.
I agree. I like seeing everything on the Switch. Really, like the only thing on the Switch that I wish it had, well, aside from the ability to see my freaking friends' names on their freaking IDs, Nintendo, is you know, just that general trophy or achievement mechanic. Because though I've come to be okay with not having it due to having a Switch since 2017, but I still miss it sometimes. I miss that beep, beep, or the bloop. Oh, you earned this achievement. You earned this thing. I miss seeing that. And it, believe it or not, it did incentivize me to do things in certain games I would not have done otherwise, for better or worse.
Oh, yeah.
So I do kind of miss them. But for the most part, every game hitting up on the Switch, if it's good, because that TV/portability is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and all of yours today were on the Switch.
You better believe it. And I played all of them on the go.
Let's see. What did Chris do? Chris has two on the Switch and then one on PS4.
The Switch is the wave of the future, man. It's kind of funny, too, because, yeah, the thing is not as powerful as the Xbox or the PlayStation, but it's powerful enough. You know, I've seen people complain, like, oh, this is stupid. Why isn't it on the PS4 with better graphics? Like, I don't care. It works. It looks great. I can see if it had, like, a bunch of slowdown because it was meant for a more powerful machine. Mm-hmm. But they optimize the games properly. They generally look good enough for me not to care in favor of having a good time.
Which is what matters, having a good time.
Damn Skippy.
But Pernell, it's always good having you on. We got to move to Chris since I already kind of spoiled that he's next. So do you have any final words?
Keep freaking warm, especially if you're in the Midwest. Polar vortex madness, man. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. They said the real feel is negative 51.
Yeah, fuck that.
That sounds like literal apocalypse. I don't like it.
All right, moving on, we got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing fantastic.
How's things for you?
Oh, pretty good. Wind's blowing really hard over here, and the temperature just dropped like 40 degrees, so that's Texas for you.
Yay! I think they're calling for like negative 10 degrees this week sometime, which...
Oh, God.
Fuck all of that.
Yeah. Global warming's not real because it's cold, right?
Yeah, obviously.
That's certainly not a side effect of something the scientists have been warning us about for decades.
No, that's crazy talk.
Yeah, it's crazy talk. All that stuff those scientists empirically measured. Anyways, somebody once described the Texas winter as being like a lover in an angry argument who keeps like storming out of the room, but then, like, you know, slamming the door open again and saying, and just one more thing. So, like, that adequately describes what we're going through over here right now.
Oh, man.
That's okay. I'm wrapped up in blankets and ready to talk about some depressing games.
All right. You ready to do this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. Your first game to talk about is called Drowning, which is a happy title. Developed by Polygonal Wolf, published by Sometimes You, released January 31st on Switch, PS4, and PS Vita for $2.99. You will play in the eyes of a young boy starting out high school in year 7 and play through his following years, where he learns that living with depression is like living with someone trying to put you down all the time, which I know plenty about. Chris, how is this game?
I'm looking up Sometimes You because I know I've done one of their games recently.
Yeah, they publish a lot of indie games.
Yeah, I was gonna say, their website is bad. I can't sneak a peek. Okay, but yeah, I think I've done Sometimes You before, but yeah, this game. I looked at this one on PS4, which is rare for me nowadays. I've been mostly covering Switch. So Drowning is a game that is, it's first person. It's exactly like Skyrim. So the first thing I did was wander around and try to find a wheel of cheese. And to my astonishment, it turns out that despite the presence of a very lovely, looks like moving cardboard waterfall, like that's an art style I really dig. It's like fake stop motion, essentially. Turns out this is not exactly Skyrim. You walk along a linear path, very linear. That is to say, you can't even, like, you know, take a break and go walk off into the grass kind of thing.
Yeah.
And your path takes you through text that types itself out noisily in front of you, like words floating in the air. And when you're done looking at those words, you then move on to the next set of words. That's the entire game, apart from like one little event towards the end. All you're doing is walking and reading. That's everything. So the story that you're told is of a kid who, I guess it starts in year 8 and ends somewhere around like year 12. So I guess it's supposed to be your high school years, you know, 8th grade through 12th grade.
Yeah.
That seemed to be, it talks a lot about school, which automatically disconnects me because I had an unconventional schooling, you know, in my life. So none of the specific stories hit home. So I just read it as somebody just typing out his experience, you know?
Yeah.
Rather than, than something trying to reach out to me specifically, which, you know, when it comes to these kind of things, that's all you can do. Because everybody's going to treat it different, is going to feel something differently. So, you know, it's a story about a normal kid who meets a friend who eventually convinces him or her that, you know, everybody's out to get them. And, you know, it very clearly becomes this, like, thin metaphor for, you know, depression kind of creeping in right around puberty and, you know, torturing you all through high school. Until, you know, and the game, you know, it goes through just this kind of linear course where things just get worse and worse until person, you know, has suicidal thoughts. And then, you know, spoiler alert, they don't commit suicide.
It's well, not that is a good thing.
You don't actually drown in the game. It does have a section that describes drowning, but it's not really that. And, but, you know, the whole thing is just literally a walk through dialogue, and it takes about 20 minutes to get to the end. You get about 4 trophies along the way for just doing things like starting the game and continuing the game and then ending the game. And so, you know, and, you know, again, it's split up into 4 chapters, and you can skip any one of them that you like from the menu. If you want to go straight to one thing, which I suppose you would want to do that. So, of course, you know, given that this game was handed to me to critique, there is not really much there to critique. I mean, the graphics are functional. The music is nice. It's all piano music. Contributed by 5 people, which is odd because I only counted 4 pieces of music. So I'm like, I don't really know what's going on there. But anyway, so one has to look at the writing itself, and there's 2 things, I guess, is how well does it control through the words and how are the words themselves? Well, so the controls are forced non-inverted first-person controls, which you and I both hate.
Yes, I need my inverted controls.
Yeah, there's no option to invert the controls. And on the PS4, it's particularly bad because also the touchpad is active, and the only other button you can use to interact with the game is the X button, which you can use to run. Not run, it's just walking slightly faster in case you're a better reader and you can read words as you're walking through them rather than having to stop in front of each one and like take in every word. So I was sitting there trying to run through the whole game, but the problem is the run is the cross button and the looking around is the right stick. And so I had to like eagle claw it in order to get them both going at the same time.
No.
And then that caused my finger to cross over onto the touchpad, where as soon as you touch the right side of the touchpad, your guy wrenches his head over to the right, where there's nothing going on. You just hear typing, and you're looking at mountains. So I'm like, there's only one thing you do in the whole game, and you couldn't get the controls right to do it. But and then the words themselves, like I said, I found the story to be, you know, I always feel like I'm the wrong person to talk about depression simulation because I think that video games do a noble thing. You know, people who develop these kind of games, they have noble intentions to essentially, you know, tell people they're not alone and they should seek help and things like that. But so I can't really comment on on that. It's going to affect different people differently. But like, this game is rife with misspellings and missing letters and words. Like, I counted about 12 instances where either a word was it had this weird like grammar thing, like is and was all in the same sentence kind of things, you know, like tense arguments, which made it a little hard to read. And then like, yeah, sometimes like the word to or the would be like missing from a sentence. And at first I was like, okay, is this like an unreliable narrator? Are we supposed to like get the sense that this guy is young? So, you know, that is this supposed to play into the writing somehow? But it actually doesn't. It's just lots of typos, like lots of stuff that's a simple spell check of the game's like, I don't know, 8 paragraphs worth of text could have easily fixed. So I didn't really get that. I was like, why? I don't understand this lack of quality control. You've got 20 people on your credits here. Like, but anyways, so the controls were awkward and the writing was awkward, and it's a game about walking and reading. So yeah, that's what I got out of it.
Well, $3, what is your recommendation?
I mean, look, $3, it's hard to sneeze at something for $3.
I'm guessing this is something that's meant to be more about the experience than an actual game.
This is about something, and that's also another weird thing. It's that, like, it's hard to recommend this game for a specific kind of person, because I feel like the specific kind of person that would benefit from this game needs more help than a $3 game, you know?
Yeah.
But it's, again, it's a relaxing, you know, it is relaxing to walk through it. It does make you feel something or other. And, you know, it does bring, I think, a positive message to an extremely negative thing to deal with. So for that reason, yeah, if you just want to like have a little bit of affirmation, I suppose, and you don't mind the quirks, then yeah, $3, go ahead. For anybody looking for a video game, though, stay away.
this isn't a game. It's walking sims are their own genre. So
it's very much walking through a diorama. It's more digital art than it is game. So
yeah,
fair warning there.
All right. Well, next game to talk about, another happy one, is called Bad Dream Coma, developed by Desert Fox, published by Forever Entertainment, released January 24th on the Switch for $9.99. Welcome to Bad Dream Coma, a point-and-click adventure game where a unique minimalistic art style creates an unforgettable and atmospheric experience. Chris, tell us about it.
Unique minimalist art style is starting to become a bane on my existence. Okay, so this is a point and click. It is horror themed. It has horror elements to it. So this game starts with you going to sleep. You can see your feet and you can see the window and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is ominous because I'm going to see like something creepy in this room. And then no, it just starts the first chapter. And your first dream is trying to cross a bridge, which you have to figure out. The bridge is dilapidated and broken. There's crows crowing all around. There's weird broken things all around, bottles and cans and newspapers. And if you interact with the newspapers, they tell you, oh, this nurse is missing. Oh, this hospital will fix you up. And it's kind of, you know, portents of things to come. And as you're clicking through, you find out that you have to get across this bridge somehow because it is broken at a key point, and so you have to figure out how to get across it because you can't just jump, of course, because the screens are all static, and you just go from screen to screen as soon as the icon turns into feet. Of course, this game uses either the touch screen or you move the cursor around with the stick. So that's your interface. And so, of course, when you're moving the cursor around with a stick, then that, you know, it changes depending on how you can interact with something. So sometimes you can look at something, sometimes you can walk to another place. And in the case of the crows, the thing turns into a fist and you can punch the crow and then it collapses in a bloody heap.
Nice.
So when I did that, I was like, oh, that I didn't mean to do that. What is that? And then I looked at the pause screen and it had a the status, which it shows three stick figure characters. One is good, one is neutral, and one is evil, and the good one was crossed out. So this is a this is not only a point and click, it is a point and click that's also a morality game, something like Undertale or something like that.
Nice.
Where your choices will put you on interminably on a path towards a, I assume, one of three endings. There's got to be three endings. So obviously, if you're a good person, you want to try and get the good ending. If you're a bad person, you want to try and get the bad ending. Hopefully, they don't permanently like alter your save data if you chose to be early. Choose to be evil early on. But you know, the cool thing is that it lets you reload from all the auto saves. So if you do something, you make a mistake, you can reload, and you know, you'll be fine. So then it actually becomes this thing where you try to solve the puzzles while keeping yourself on the moral path that you have chosen. So that actually turned into some interesting puzzle solutions. And, you know, again, I played this game for a few hours and actually also, so I chose the good path and I actually got pretty far in the good path. I haven't yet crossed myself out, you know, permanently off the good path, but then I was like, well, I don't have time to replay the whole game, so I'm just going to watch a playthrough video of the evil path, and it turns out that does exist. In fact, lots and lots and lots of playthrough videos for this game exist, because apparently a famous YouTuber played through this game, and that's probably why, that probably boosted it to, like, bestseller status. That Markiplier guy, he's pretty... And I'm sure he overreacted to every scene. Whereas in my good playthrough, I was like, it keeps telling me that scary things are going to happen, but nothing happens. I just keep talking to people. Things look, you know, it's kind of like an Addams Family thing. It's like, it's a little macabre, but it's not, there's nothing really evil or like nothing jumps out at you. And, you know, there's no jump scares or, you know, the music's kind of creepy. And of course there's one, at one point, the game uses my number one least favorite, that is to say, like, will turn my opinion of a game around, move that any kind of horror flavored thing does. And that is a persistent baby crying.
Oh, and
it does it to you in chapter one. It's actually a baby doll, because when you come across it, you know, it just starts randomly crying and you can't get away from it. And every scene that you can walk to, you can still hear it. And in the, you know, the screen where you actually can look at the baby, you find out it's a doll and it's partially broken and all this other stuff. But, you know, again, this is a good example of like the morality choices, is that you have a crowbar in your inventory, and you can smash that baby if you want, and that will stop the crying, and you get the wire that you need to raise a drawbridge later on in the level to get through it. So that's the evil solution, of course.
Of course.
And the good solution is that there is a remote control that you use to crash a little toy car into a wall that you have to do. You can't, like, steer the car into a good direction or anything. You have to crash it and, for whatever reason, kill the tiny person that was in it, and that doesn't register as evil. But if you do that and you've crashed the car, so now the remote control is no longer in use, if you use the crowbar to smash the controller, you get the same wire and the baby just stops crying and is smiling at you. Like, interesting. So it's, yeah, so it's just one of those point and clicks where it's just like, okay, the solutions are bizarre sometimes, and that always leads to trouble. And actually, I found out, like, you find out in the plot of the game in Chapter 2 that what it is that you, apparently the dreamer, the character, I guess, that you technically are, has fallen into a coma and cannot wake up, and thus nobody in the dream world can die because there's no way for their existence to end because the dream is persistent. And so that just means that, like, you kind of have to help. You have to help somehow. It didn't really make it clear how it was supposed to do that. But so any kind of damage you or anyone else takes is permanent, but also they live through it. So, like, you actually run across a doctor who is just ahead, for instance. And, you know, they're like, death is nowhere to be found and all that stuff. And I was like, wow, this is just like the other, this is like Discworld 2, which I'm also playing through right now. That's, except this is way less charming and British. So yeah, it's, the writing in the game is minimal. The soundtrack is almost non-existent. It's just scary, you know, scary things.
Ambient sounds, noise.
Ambience, yeah. And there's like, what you could call music, but it's more like sneaking around the stings in movies and stuff. And occasionally they'll have like a heightened, like, you know, dun dun dun, like kind of, you know, psycho moment, but like it's just part of the song. It's not actually indicative of anything that's going on in the game. And yeah, really my thing about this game is that it really is just a pixel hunt. And you have a limited inventory, so it's really just clicking on every single little, you know, series of dots that you can find on the screen, and then just using them on anything that it'll let you use them on until you win. It's not, so that's not what I would consider as clever as some point and clicks, but I mean, it works for people who really want to strain their brain on this kind of stuff. And what I like about this, though, is I really like the fact that it's combining a point and click with a morality simulator. I much prefer that to RPGs doing that.
Yeah.
And plus, I, again, watching the evil playthrough, I noticed that puzzles change radically, and sometimes you get whole different puzzles depending on which path you're taking. So essentially, this is like three different games.
That's cool.
So you get a lot for what you get out of this one. It's just, for me, this isn't the kind of point and click that resonates deeply. Like, I'll probably still end up getting to the good ending just to see what happens, because I am curious. Yeah. So.
Well, overall, $10, what do you think?
$10, I mean, like, I would say it's a try it. Just because on its face, it's not the most interesting point and click on the Switch. I've reviewed much more interesting ones for the same price. However, if you are looking for something specifically horror themed, that's a little more rare. And of course, you know, it seems to me that people are buying this game just to play through it on YouTube and react to it, because I've seen like 100 videos of that so far.
Holy crap.
So if you're in, if you're a budding YouTuber or Twitch person, then yeah, go ahead and get this game, Tools of the Trade. Am I right?
Pretty much. But you got one last game to talk about. Final game of the night is called Fishing Universe Simulator, developed by Ultimate Games, published once again by Forever Entertainment, released January 24th on the Switch, again for $9.99. Bored of waiting for a bite? Would you like to catch some fish? You're lucky. In Fishing Universe Simulator, fish bite like crazy. Spinning, float fishing, ground fishing, and more. Chris, tell us about it.
I'm so glad that they included in the... in the copy that that fish bite rapidly in this game, because that's one thing I noticed almost right away. I was like, holy shit, you catch so many goddamn fish in this, which was such a relief to me because I'm so bad at these games usually. But here I was rocking out, filling up my net. Okay, so Ultimate Fishing Simulator is actually a lot of what I've been looking for in a fishing game, because I'm not hardcore. I don't fish in real life. You would not get me on a lake. I just wouldn't do it. So therefore, I need my fishing to be done through the computer and through the video games. You know, while my cat sits enthralled and interested in the fish that are going by. And so this game has the actual gameplay element of it is that you walk around in first person, exactly like Skyrim. And in your bemackinawed hand, you know, your beplatted hand is a fishing pole, and that's it. And then you walk around a set piece. There are two. Well, technically, there's one that you get to start off in. The other one's a tutorial, so it doesn't really count as much. But so you have one free fishing area that you can walk around in, and I haven't yet unlocked more of them because you actually have to gain like levels in this game to unlock stuff as well as pay money. So I was like, ugh, but it's fine. I just walk, you know, you can walk along anywhere. Eventually you're going to hit water, so don't think you can go, you know, flying off into the mountains to fight a dragon or anything like that. Instead, you find a spot on the water and you cast your line out, and then from there you actually use the two sticks in order to manipulate your fishing pole. So your left one, you actually have to ratchet it up in order to draw your rod up, and you know that hooks a fish if when your little bobby thing goes underwater, which is of course shown in a camera window on the upper right of the screen. And then you have to actually turn the right stick in order to reel that sucker in. And once you do, then you get, you know, it tells you what kind of fish it is, how much it weighs, and you can choose to keep it or throw it back. I don't know why you would throw it back unless you were specifically involved in a challenge tournament, because then you can go back to the main menu when you're done fishing and then sell off all your fish. And, you know, some of the like little terrible fish, whatever they're called, are worth like, I don't know, 7 gold coins. They have gold coins for whatever reason. And, you know, I was catching some just on the beginning level with the default gear. I was catching some that were worth like 28 to 30 gold coins. So that's nice. Pretty nice. And another thing I noticed is that the game actually lets you sort of play a quick roulette, an everybody wins style roulette at the beginning of every day, like real world day, or at least every time I've turned it on for the first time in a day, it's done this. And so you actually can get like free lures that way, some free money, maybe even like a free rod or something like that. I don't know. But I really like that it has that, because it keeps me coming back. Because the reason you want money is because then you can purchase literally everything. That is to say, you can buy different kinds of lines that are different lengths and weights. You can buy different kinds of lures that work on different kinds of fish. You can buy different baits for the lures that work on different kinds of fish and more effectively. You know, like I said, you know, different rods, different nets that hold more fish. And then you can buy boats up to and including a luxury yacht.
Ooh.
Yeah, so, and the sky's the limit on, like, stuff that this game lets you do if you actually collect all the money and, you know, save up for it. But, I mean, twice when I played the lottery, I won, like, $1,000. So, you know, I was getting close there. So it's a game that you keep playing in order to persistently upgrade your stuff and get better rewards and then, you know, get the best stuff and then go do the best things. It's basically an RPG of a fishing game, exactly like Skyrim. And so, and so I really found myself enthralled with this one. Now, the graphics aren't like the best, but honestly, for the fact that it's full on 3D, I mean, yeah, the water looks like Wave Race 64, but still, it functions really well. Actually, the fish look super nice. I thought the fish looked really cool. And, you know, there doesn't need to be too much to it. Like, you know, it functions and it looks good, and I quite enjoyed it. There's no soundtrack. There's only soundtracks in the menu, and I think it's just one song. For that reason, you're going to want to play this with some other music in the background, unless you just want to hear, like, you know, it's for the most part in the level I've been playing, it's just had soothing, like, you know, raindrops and stuff and the sound of fishing. You know, that if that's enough for you and you're just looking for a relaxing time, that's good, but don't look for any solid tunes on this one. The other thing I noticed, and this is random, I wasn't looking for this, there are only two language options in the game, and that is US and Polish.
Interesting.
And also, the first free level that you can go to is in Poland, so I assume that this game was probably made in Poland or thereabouts. I don't know that for a fact, but this is Sherlock Holmes style deductive reasoning here.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Well, overall, $10 on it. What do you think?
$10. I mean, if you want a fishing game and you don't want to like invest in like one of the like top end, you know, Remington, whatever they are, this is a great alternative. It definitely keeps, you know, hooking you back in for more. yeah. No, for $10, this one is worth $10. I mean, there's a lot in this game, and it's fun to play. The only little things that I would mark against it is lack of motion control. I would have really liked some motion control, because it seems like all fishing games since like the PlayStation 1 era have implemented them at some point,
yeah,
in some way. The other thing is that like on the touchscreen controls, like it makes for better menuing, but for some reason I just could not get the fishing gear to work. I don't know. Maybe I don't remember them ever going over that in the tutorial either. Like I was trying to like spin the little picture of the reel on my thing and it was just like, like not even letting me do it. So I don't know, more intuitive touch controls, but I'm not going to play this with touch controls. I'm going to play it on my TV with my pro controller. Yeah. And it's great with that setup. So
awesome. Sounds good.
This one's a buy it.
Sounds good. Chris, always good having you on. Thanks again to everyone else who came on and did their thing. That is the end of this episode. I don't know what else to say. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
Fus Roda.
Never seem to turn out all right with all we go through. What more can we do? Is there some higher plan? Why must we hurt our fellow man? If we open our hearts, we may see a better way for things to be. Love, we'll overlove in a category of love. Our hearts are bound together. We will train, we will build up to a love that will never die. And we will never have to say goodbye. Was always inside of you. You've just gotta believe that you can eat more fruits and vegetables. Get a couple more hours of sleep. Maybe get a tan. If you can believe the miraculous, one heart can be the catalyst. The walls may come before us. We will try. We
you think you can? If you're really a Belmont and not some runt running around with a family crest, you might be able to. Let's find out.
Yo. Grab your whip, don't let the tremor make you slip. I come fully equipped to make your heart rate trip. I dip in the shadows just long enough to flip this vampiric lyric so your blood flow clips. Now taste my lips, the copper aftertaste, it ain't mine. That belongs to Mr. Tempest. Set that a line and caught the menace with the blood curly rhyme. Spectacular whiplash, unabashed since 85. Vocalizing vascular massacres on these amateurs. Immobilizing savages, eliminating pathogens. I'm international, grass cutter of the highest caliber. Pentangular orifice, custom made for your grandmother. Cover your ears, bub, deafen your cheers, cuh. I'm digging through these skeletons looking for evidence of evil so decadent, renaissance is elegant. I'm here to wipe the pestilence, a little penitence.
Yeah, I am your demon, see. Yeah, I am your demon, weed. Yeah, I am your demon, weed.
Belmont, you can't do this!
Tell it to your floating vampire Jesus here. You've got nothing but insults, have you? A tired little...
Uncontested excellence, raveling with your reticence. Tough to spot your melanin, flee me in a cake. Contrast the elements, handling all the relevant entrails. So delicate, angling from your name. I wanna talk about all of your dummy padawans. None of your hard enough trading lyrics like Ottawa's. I'm on the crawl, so tall, I see Nepal. Your games fake like mannequins, get put down like Anakin. Hardcore, Sith Lord, step light like a Rancor. You find I get locked out like a barn door. I swear I tell you shit, castle down to the ground floor. Moldy with corpses, your guard is so short and eyesore. Common, extraordinary maquette lacks abnormalities. Not like you punk motherfuckers with your profanities. In reality, I'd rather stay slaying vanities. Miracle whip, crack your face like a manatee. So sorry, I gotta be the dude at the party with a Sharpie. I'm drawing Barbies on your face, I'm sorry, but I'm kind of smarmy and my dominance is alarming. If you're the type that's swallowing Dramamine in the morning as though, that keep your plans at the verticals, got you tardy as though. You coming at me with an army's gonna harm me, bruh. Drop the Dramamine, embrace the sodomy. Hard up autonomy, hit check taxonomy. You got the rhyme on the nose lost in synonymy. You see me start like a crash course in astronomy. Yeah, hell son, come and get some. But you still better be calling me Master Belmont. I've got the legacy to hunt you till you're long gone. Hang drawn and quartered like your name was fucking St. John. My partner's life up on that is no she can count on. Me being hands, I'm the hardest slayer I hell spawned.